And there's your 8 o'clock rooster call on this 163rd day of 2016. All right, today's June 11th. We have 15 hours and 14 minutes of sunlight today. What is that going to let us do to our trees this morning? It's Rosie on the house. We were talking trees in this outdoor living hour with John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. That's a lot of hours of sunlight.
That's a lot of hours.
It is. You know, I was
and in warm hours too. I got to stand out inside for a couple of it yesterday.
We went to a 70s high school reunion last night, and it's so funny. I had to be up for the broadcast today, and one of our other friends had to be up for something this morning. So we walked out of the reunion last night, and it was still light out. I mean, this is a perfect example of an old fogey is when you. Leave your high school reunion, and it's still light out when you leave, you know. It was a 10-year reunion. We were up till 4 in the morning drinking with friends. And 20-year reunion, you know, it's kind of, well, I think it's like 10 o'clock. I think we better start heading, thinking about going home.
The light's still on.
And now it's a 40-year reunion. It's like we're out of there at 7:30, 8 o'clock.
Aren't we sneaking up here in the next week or two on the longest day of the year? I mean, that's the 21st.
That's the
bright spot of June. This summer is as long as the day is going to be, and you can just start counting the days down to fall
and
after
you get,
that, right?
You get 4 extra minutes than you do today. You get 15 hours and 18 minutes on the solstice.
Well, lots to do with your trees today. If you're out in your yard today, if you can handle the heat, now's the time to be out there. I was out this morning actually shoveling some dirt at 5:30 this morning because we have irrigation coming on Monday, so we had to do some berm repairs, and I thought I got to take advantage of the cooler weather. But, yeah, we got a lot on the show today. We want to encourage your calls to phone in with your questions later, but we want to talk a little bit about getting your trees ready for summer. We want to talk a little bit about the summer tree care class we had last week. Those of you who had a chance to go and take that class in at the Desert Botanical Garden, we're glad you could make it out. If you weren't able to make it to the class, we have a great article called Preparing Trees for Summer on our website. If you haven't had a chance to check that article out or you missed some of our broadcasts last month, go to the website itreeservice.com/articles, and you'll find the article called Preparing Trees for Summer. It's a great review, just talks about wind dynamics, about irrigation, about staking and guying. And it'll cover a lot of the stuff we talked about last month. But get your trees ready for summer. The most important thing you'll find in that article is being sure you prune your trees to reduce the end weight. It's the end weight that pulls trees over, that breaks branches. And it takes a little bit of skill to do that. That's what we cover in our class classes each summer, is how to do good crown reduction pruning. Anybody can do crown thinning, that is, removing all those smaller branches on the inside, but you don't want to gut the inside of your trees and leave these heavy lion tails of foliage on the outer third of the canopy. People think that that's going to make the tree safer because the wind blows through the inside, but those ends out on the ends of those branches flag in the wind, and they quite often break, or they can pull the tree over. You need to learn how to make some crown reduction cuts as well as some thinning cuts, so you are kind of reducing the overall height and spread of the tree as well as just thinning out the middle.
Is there a degree of arc you look for to cut it back as it's bending? Does that tell you it's too heavy? Well, over like a 30 degree?
If your branches are bending over, they probably are pretty heavy. In fact, we were looking at some Texas olives this week, and they were just so loaded with fruit that the branches were nearly breaking, and our customer wisely thinned a lot of that fruit out. And yeah, absolutely. Certain times of year, the African sumacs get loaded down with those seed pods, and also your mesquites get heavy with pods. So, yeah, when those trees start loading up, and it's right about now because they've bloomed in the spring, they're loading up with the fruit and the pods right before the monsoon comes in July. So, yeah, it's a good idea to get out. And most of those pods are out in the outer third of the canopy. So, yes, if you can remove some of those branches that are heavy with fruit or pods, a good idea. It's a good way to reduce that end weight.
I sure hope a monsoon comes, and it smelled like rain this morning. And there is,
I know where was El Nino? What happened?
Hopefully he's still coming. Maybe he's just joining up with the monsoon to make it a
joining
really
up with,
great.
With La Nina.
But as hot as and irritating as the Arizona summers can be, it's the only time you get to smell that wet creosote. And it doesn't have the aroma that it does in the wintertime when it's cooler. There's something about that heat and the wetness of a creosote
oil.
That
I know,
you can't get anywhere else in the world.
I know. And it's only us Arizonans who come to appreciate that over the years. Yeah, I love that smell. It's quite a quintessential Arizona smell. In fact, this morning, after that little bit of rain last night, did you have rain at your place?
No, we didn't, but I got the smell.
We had quite a bit here. Yeah, it was not too long of a rain, but I woke up to hear it on the roof and woke up this morning with just a little hint of that smell, that desert smell. Yeah.
I had about 6 sprinkles doing chores last night. That was the it for our – now, on the monsoons and the rain, if we get it, which we're always hoping for, we see a lot of times trees blown over because of saturation and the moisture. And that's usually trees that have been planted. They haven't moved their drip lines correctly. The roots are in tighter than the branches are out. And saturated roots, heavy trees, there's a lot of tree toppling.
Yeah, bad combination is when we get into that regular cycle of afternoon monsoon rains, and you'll have a day after day after day of a good downpour, it sets up conditions for that soil to be waterlogged. And then if we get a big blow, it unfortunately, instead of a branch breaking, you've got entire tree failure where the entire root plate will pull up out of the soil and you lose the entire tree. And that's a shame. So, yeah, when we get into that regular cycle of forecasted thunderstorms, and it probably is a good idea to shut your irrigation timer off, turn it to the rain setting, because you don't want to be exacerbating the problem with getting some that seasonal rain, and then you to have your irrigation timer click on and throw a bunch more water into that already wet soil. Because, like I said, that sets up the conditions for that total tree failure where root balls come up and the whole tree is lost. You can repair trees if they lose a branch or two, but it's a shame when these big trees go down and the whole thing comes up.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you to join the conversation. You can also text your questions to 411-923, where we're talking with John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service, Monsoon Prep, getting our trees ready to take the wind.
Yeah, I wanted to mention a couple of quick things. I'm going to just run through this brief article that I posted onto our. It's on our website, Preparing Trees for Summer. But for those of you who are doing a little bit of work in your yard today, keep this in mind. If you've planted a good quality tree, that's a good place to start. You know, start well, end well. If you got a good quality tree in the ground, it's going to serve you a lot longer period of time. It'll have a lot less problems, a lot less issues with our soil conditions, our natural pests. We always are encouraging people to go native instead of desert-adapted trees because of that very thing. They have a lower profile in the landscape. They handle the wind better. And, of course, they're much more adapted to our weather. Also, plant trees in groups. If you're planting some trees, don't set that tree out in the corner of your yard where it's going to be, completely isolated and vulnerable to that wind. A couple of two or three trees planted together buffer the wind from each other. They buffer the sun from one another, and they work together as a team. If you're staking and guying your trees, only stake the tree if you need to. The idea is to get a tree off of a staking system, not to immobilize it and imprison it on a staking system. So unfortunately, a lot of people put their trees on a really tight system. The tree doesn't have to do any work. The roots kind of take a vacation because the stake is doing all the work for it. You want to always stake your tree loosely with a soft tie material. Allow the tree to slightly move in the wind. It helps the tree to get established. Just like our muscles need some movement to be able to grow, the wood on the trunk of our trees actually needs some movement for it to develop taper and start getting stronger to support the increasing end weight as the tree gets taller. So a little bit of movement in your staking system is critical. And it takes a little bit, it's an art and a science to do a good staking system because it's actually providing a fail-safe. It's just there to prevent catastrophic fall, you know, failure of the tree, of falling over completely. So leave it on and allow as much movement as you can inside the system, and you'll have a you'll be able to get it off the tree, off the system a lot sooner.
And that's something that oftentimes when you see a professional doing something, you think, oh, that must be the way it's done. You see a lot of trees along freeways and roads that are staked tight, or in homeowners' yards that are staked really tight. That just because a professional did that doesn't mean it was the right way to do it. That's still an improper staking.
Yeah, you like I said, you have to put them on a on the staking system with the idea that you're going to try to get them off, but allow them some movement. Also, that travel stake, that stake that's tied directly to the trunk, that should come off the day that it's put in the ground. It's only called a travel stake because it's intended to get the tree to its final destination, but then you need to pull it off that stake and put a couple of stakes, two or three stakes around it, and tie them, suspend the tree between those stakes, and try to put those stakes down into the native soil outside the planting hole so that they can be anchored in the solid soil. You don't want to put them into that loose soil that you've dug out to plant your tree, because then the stakes can get loose, or drive them down deeper below the depth of the planting hole, into some nice native soil, so those stakes are nice and firm in the ground. And also, you can tilt them out slightly away from the tree. Will give them even a little bit better anchoring. And then be sure you monitor them. Get them off the stakes as soon as you can. Usually after a single season, you should be able to have enough trunk taper developed, and those roots should be anchored out into the native soil, so you can get the tree off the stake as quick as you can. If you need help with staking and even guying, there are some metal cabling systems, guying systems that you can install. If you need help with that, you know, you can call a certified arborist in your area and get someone out to give you help.
And you can find a certified arborist outside of Integrity Tree Service working area by going to?
You can go to isa-arbor.com and put in your zip code search. That's isa-arbor.com. Put in your zip code, and you can find all the certified arborists in your area.
I tell you one thing, I've been battling really bad this year. I don't know, on your irrigated lot, have you been having gopher problems?
My goodness.
Ground squirrels? Man.
My yard's just overrun.
Oh, I hate looking out my backyard right now because I've got the beautiful lawn coming in, and I got all these little potholes, and we had a little escape this week, so we've got goats and rabbits all in the backyard.
Yeah.
And that's why we use Moltox. We don't use the Moltox. That's one of Bonide's. That's their poison. We use the Mole Max and Vole Repellent. It's a completely organic product that you just pour in the hole and on top of the dirt. Then once that pushes them outside, we pull the Moltox on them, and that has worked great. But they are ferocious, and it takes constant
vigilance.
Constant vigilance. Bonide products are family made in America. I know you've got a list of talking points there, Mr. Eisenhower, but let's get to the calls first. 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you, starting with Al in Scottsdale, is first on the line. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning. This is Al.
Yes, sir.
I have a peach tree that's about 5 or 6 years old. Did not get pruned this last winter, and all the branches are dragging on the ground. We had a huge yield of peaches we gave away, and my wife made peach jam. My question is, can I prune that now, or do I have to wait till winter?
Yeah, you can do a little bit of pruning now. I wouldn't do too much because of the risk of sunburn to the interior, but yeah, if you've got branches that are dragging on the ground, all the fruit is off now, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's either been used or it's on the ground.
Yeah, did you have any broken branches due to the fruit?
I have one that's broken, yes.
Yeah, I routinely have broken peach branches on my peach tree as well. If you don't trim them back every winter, they tend to be so long and leggy because they produce fruit on the current year's growth. So wherever you have blooms in the spring, that's where your fruit's going to set, and it's all out on that new growth. So if you have 2 years of growth on the tree, then you'll have branches that are twice as long as they should be, and with the same amount of fruit. So it sets up conditions for a lot of branch breakage. Like last year, I had to put a couple of props under the branches to hold them up because they wouldn't have made it through the whole season. Also, we end up anticipating the heavy weight on the ends of the branches. You can thin some of the fruit out. You hate to lose the fruit, but if you do thin it out, as when the fruit is smaller, then you'll have a better chance of the fruit that remains on the branches not busting the breaking the branches. As far as pruning right now, probably I would just trim off whatever you need to get it off the ground, alleviate the end weight on the branches so it can make it through the summer. But the best time for pruning is in December, January on all of your stone fruits, all of your deciduous trees. And, cut them back pretty far, remembering that when you do cut them back in the winter, that you'll be ready for the they'll put on 1 year's growth and all those new branches will produce fruit. But a little tighter to the tree, a little closer to the tree.
I never knew that about peaches, only on new growth. Interesting. Yeah. Now.
Yeah, which is, it's you need to know that with your apples and your pears and your plums and your peaches, nectarines. You need to know if it's first year or second year growth. I was cutting all my pear tree back, not realizing that it was a lot of the older growth, the second year growth was the fruit producing wood, and I was cutting it off every year. So I only had I only ever had 1 year wood on my trees, and so for 6 years I never got any fruit. Well, I let the tree just finally grow 1 year, and boom, I had 50 nice big pears. So yeah, you need to do a little bit of research, find out about your specific stone fruit and what year wood it produces the fruit.
Now that would intimidate me a little bit, walking up to the stone fruit tree in December and January, thinking I've got to trim this to promote the first year growth. You really do need to know that walking up to the tree with your saw, or your snips, or whatever it is, your chainsaw, whatever it is you're going to do.
Right, and you know the tree's going to put on about 5 or 6 feet of new growth each year, and it's going to be fruit-bearing wood. So with that in mind, you cut back as far as you want so that the 5 or 6 feet is going to be within reach. That's why the trees that my dog bit off, my new trees, the ones he bit off at 18 inches off the ground when he was teething, he cut about 5 of our trees down to just stubs. And I was so upset, but those have become our best fruit-bearing trees because all the wood, the new sprouts that emerged from 18 inches off the ground created a big candelabra of branches, and now that's harvestable height. Now the branches only get it to be about 8 feet high, and we can just reach up and pull the fruit off of them. Whereas the other trees, which we let sprout, the main branch structure is above 6 feet. Now we have to be on a ladder to get to the fruit, like on our peach tree.
And the ladders are dangerous because you got an A-frame, and as the tree starts to curve towards the top, you're constantly leaning over and reaching, and very, very easy to have a ladder accident
and
there.
And a little more difficult to prune, too, yeah. Everything's a little bit higher, a little bit taller.
So what type of dog do I need to get to trim my trees?
Yeah, ours is a nice lab mix. We love that guy. He just... I was so upset, but like I said, those have become our best trees. Well, it's just like Greg Peterson said with the Urban Farm. He said, when you bring this tree home, cut it off at about 2 feet off the ground. And there's no way. I bought all those 19 fruit trees from him about 8 or 9 years ago, and I couldn't bring myself to cut him down. I thought, no, I went gaga. You know what it is when a customer goes gaga? Going against good advice. And I went gaga, and I would not.
I'm writing that down right now.
I would not do what Greg told me to do. And my dog inadvertently did what Greg said to do. And that's a cut. When you bring those bare root fruit trees home and you put them on the ground, he said cut them off at about 2 feet off the ground. Because it creates the sprouts that emerge from that cut become this beautiful fruit tree at a pickable height.
That's the hardest thing I have to do is thinning. My wife and I, every night, we need to trim our tomatoes. Which one? Well, that's got red on it. That's got red on it. And we end up not trimming it. That's the hardest thing to do for us is thinning.
Directions.
If you missed last hour, we had a conversation about quality workmanship. A problem virtually every one of the contractors on our network I talked to is having is needing good work. And it's a much bigger long-term problem because shops out of schools, I won't go off on
they
that.
They won't fix the border. That's the biggest problem right there. You want me to go into about a two-hour conversation on this?
I just was coming out and say, John Eisenhower walks in and says, yeah, I need help too. You're looking for certified arborists to join your team.
Well, we are hiring right now. We're looking for climbers. Experienced climbers would be great. But, you know, we also have a climber apprenticeship position as well. Those who are physically fit, can handle the heat, and have no fear of heights, we will train you to climb. And we are always looking for able-bodied individuals who can handle the intense workload. And if you fit that bill, give us a call this week and ask for Brian, our operations manager, and schedule an interview to come in and we'll if you are an experienced climber or a certified tree worker or a certified arborist, of course, you know, you would have priority. That's preferable that you have some experience and know how to prune according to the ANSI standards and can meet the criteria we have. Or if you just would like to explore this as a career, we'd be a great place to do that training.
Excellent. iTreeService.com, ask for Brian.
Yes, go to iTreeService.com, go to the contact page, and just say you're interested in an interview, and we'll be back in touch.
Sounds good. I feel like I'm sitting in church. I've got my notes out. I've got your bullet points. Your soil sermon, sir.
Oh, well, you know, I wanted to talk so much about this because in the summer, the soil just gets beat up. And I was looking at some trees the other day, and the soil underneath some of our younger trees can just be baked like concrete. And the best thing you can do for your trees, apart from fertilizing, and sometimes even better than fertilizing, is to compost them, to put down some organic matter, work it into the soil, or even leave a layer of an inch or two of finished compost as a mulch on the soil surface. It helps reduce the soil temperature, reduces evaporation and water loss through evaporation. It actually improves the soil microbiology by breaking down over time in improving the tilth of the soil, increases the biological activity in terms of worms, other microbes that get active in that better quality soil, and it makes a better rooting environment, ultimately producing a better, more healthy tree. And I would encourage everyone who's has any yard waste in your yard to be composting it on a regular basis. Many of our listeners already compost their kitchen waste, and you can start to build your own little compost pile. Somebody said compost happens, and it does. If you just have some raked leaves and you want to push them up into a corner of your yard, you don't even need a compost bin necessarily. A compost bin is nice because it gives you a contained area where you can turn the soil regularly, add the water. But even just a spot in your yard where you can build up a mound that can be a couple of feet deep, 2 or 3 feet deep, 4 or 5 feet across, and where you can be turning that soil regularly. Over a period of time, it will start to compost, and you can get some nice material that you can put back into the soil. You know, when we rake all of our leaves in our yards, we are removing nitrogen that would normally recycle back into the soil. And when we break up that nitrogen cycle, by taking all of our yard waste away, blowing our leaves, and then putting them in the trash and throwing them away, it starves our trees. In a tree's natural setting, that leaf litter builds up on the soil surface and eventually composts, and that nitrogen makes its way back into the soil to feed the tree, to make the tree healthier. So we really encourage you to do that. Someone has said that as go the roots, so go the shoots. And good, healthy roots are going to produce good above-ground growth. You know, roots are kind of the unsung heroes. They are doing a lot of work underground and producing all that nice lush growth above ground. And the better we can, the more we can improve the growing conditions, the rooting conditions, the better trees we're going to have. there's a lot we can do. And it's not just a matter of throwing fertilizer at the trees, you know, putting chemicals down. Actually improving the soil tilth, the texture, the structure of the soil by incorporating organic matter into the soil or even putting that layer of mulch is important for creating that more favorable rooting environment. Of course, the fertilizer might be a help, but I hate to, for people to think that they can rely on fertilizer alone to do all of that, throwing down a few chemicals every now and then onto that parched soil. Also, there's several other things that we offer. We do vertical mulching. Vertical mulching is actually taking an auger and augering down into the soil around some of our trees where there's been compaction. Sometimes the soil is so compact that no matter what we do, it's difficult to get soil to penetrate into the soil profile. Knowing that so water needs to be down to an 18-inch depth of saturation, after a lot of pedestrian traffic or vehicular traffic, sometimes it's absolutely impossible because we pushed all the oxygen out of the soil, so there's very little soil pore space, they call it. Well, what we'll do is we'll go with an auger, a 2 or 3 inch auger bit, and we'll drill down 18, 24 inches deep on 3 foot centers all the way around the root, the drip line of a tree, inside the drip line of the tree. And then we'll put pea gravel, soil sulfur, gypsum, maybe add a little fertilizer down into those little columns. And what the pea gravel does is it holds those holes open. And it allows oxygen to get into the root system, allows water to penetrate down into that area. It's a really great way to kind of remediate compacted soil conditions. We also do
very interesting. I'm kind of fascinated by that. I see these stakes that you can drive in that you plug mm-hmm. a hose to and they water. So it's
essentially the same principle, but we do it multiple times all the way around a tree. When we have older, mature trees that have had some construction damage, a lot of compaction of the soil, maybe you've been trafficking wheelbarrows full of materials like decomposed granite over the root zone of some trees, and then a lot of pedestrian traffic, even vehicular traffic, or the storage of construction materials around trees, pallets and piles of sand. People think, oh, if I put a pile of sand underneath that tree, there's not a problem with that, is there? Yes, there is. Even if the sand is eventually moved, the compaction is permanent. You've just put 4 or 5 tons of sand over an area of soil, and it's pushed and compressed all the oxygen out of that soil profile, 2 or 3 feet deep. So we go back in and drill all these holes and fill them with the pea gravel. The pea gravel keeps the holes open for many, many years. If you don't put the pea gravel in, you just put the soil sulfur and soil back in, they'll just close back up. And we found that there's research has shown that it just doesn't do any good. You need to keep those holes open. We also do radial trenching, where we find the main roots that radiate out from the tree, and we find spaces in between those, and we'll trench away from the trunk of the tree and do the same thing, put in some better quality soil to improve the overall growth conditions for that tree. Then the lateral roots from the tree can grow out into that more favorable soil.
How are you locating those laterals? Just visually with a little spade, or are you imaging the soil somehow?
No, we like to use our air spade. And it's an air tool that lets us displace the soil around the base of the trees using air pressure only. We drive it with 185 CFM compressor, which ramps up the airspeed to about Mach 2. And you definitely need hearing protection.
Wow.
Because it's a special nozzle on the end of this air tool. And it blows all the soil out from around the base of the trees. In fact, we used it at that one project we did. We went in with that to kind of find out where the roots were, and then we made our soil cuts with our trencher. But we go in and identify where the roots are, where the main scaffold roots are, and then we start doing our trenching. And we try to avoid hitting any of the major roots, but what we're doing these are remedial projects for larger trees that are having trouble in our soil conditions or for various reasons have had some other compaction issues. So, yeah, and the root, this air spade, by the way, is a new technology. It's only been used for the last 15 years or so, but it's really a fantastic tool because it lets us do root collar excavations and underground examination around the base of trees without hurting the roots, without disturbing the irrigation lines, without hurting the electrical all the other utilities are below ground.
John, do me a favor. The next time y'all have that tool being utilized, I'd love to see it in use. Because I'm thinking of about 15 different applications for that, not only looking for roots, but I think I could use it often. I'm not even familiar with it.
It's really, really nice. You know, we've been using it for several years. It's good to moisten the soil to a depth of, you know, about 12 or 18 inches several days ahead of time. So you're not working in mud because mud gets all over your face shield. It's pretty dirty work because but you don't want it dusty either and be in violation of dust codes. So we try to keep the soil moist but not muddy. And yeah, we will. We'll definitely give you a call. And it's really been good because we do all sorts of investigative work with it. We used to do root collar excavations, trying to determine problems that trees had using hand tools, but you invariably would hit the roots you're trying to look at because you're trying to dig in through the soil and all of a sudden you use a hand tool and you've hit the root and you're trying to pull the soil away and look at it. This air spade has been fantastic.
I'm very, very interested in seeing it because I'm thinking I have several applications in general remodeling where we could use it often.
Well, have you done hydro excavation with air pressure, potholing?
Back when I first went to work for Bill Jenkins, you know, we used to use PVC with a hose nozzle on it to shoot underneath driveways to get sprinkler lines.
They have some industrial strength hydro excavators that but they're too damaging to the roots because it's over 3,000 psi and it'll hurt the roots. This air technology is nicer because you can back the pressure off and excavate displace the soil without hurting the roots.
You know, every time I sit down and talk with one of our ROSI certified experts, I keep thinking of ways we can do things better. And you know, I'm going home this afternoon and I'm changing the way our remodeling contracts are written. When we have landscaping included in the remodeling, I'm now going to include in the base bid revisiting the property in 90 days and destaking all the trees, and I'm going to revisit the property in 1 and 2 years and extend the drip line irrigation to the trees so the people don't have to worry about that. So
it's a great idea.
The first couple of years, everything's taken care of. I'm going to change that this afternoon. Thank you, John.
That's great. After midnight, we're going to let it all hang down.
On this beautiful Arizona Saturday morning, we start this Talking Tree segment with a text message that's actually come in from what we call the bird, the Skyview Satellite Distribution Unit.
The question was, I have this listener has a 21-year-old mesquite tree, and there's cracks around the base of the tree. He said fissures in the soil, and he says, what does this mean? And I saw a few of these this week, and it's a concern if you see the soil heaving or cracks that radiate away from your tree on one or more sides of the tree. It could indicate that the tree has blown in the wind enough that it pulled the tree over in one direction, lifting one of the roots that grew in that direction, and it cracks the soil above it. If you see that happening, that's not a good sign, and it's a warning that the tree could be unstable in the soil. It might be a good idea to consider guying the tree using a duckbill system. There are some available at your local hardware stores, or you can call a certified arborist to get them out. There are some larger kind of industrial-size duckbill systems, which are a duckbill system is a steel cable with an anchor on the base of it that's driven into the soil, deep into the soil. And when the line is tensioned, it turns the duckbill sideways in the soil and anchors that cable deep into the soil. You might want to consider hiring a certified arborist to come out and take care of that for you. That's not a good sign. Sometimes when we do anchor those into the soil, we have actually watered some of those in and then recompacted the soil with the idea of trying to get those roots to settle back down in. And because what happens is if a tree does pull up like that, it'll cause air to fill voids, it'll cause some air pockets to develop down underneath those roots. And if it can dry those roots out and actually kill the tree. So if you can water that in and push the soil back down into those cavities, It'll help to resettle the tree.
There's quite a fine balance in your business, because the whole last segment you were talking about drilling down to add more air and loosen up the soil.
That's right. Well, there are times you don't want it to be so loose that the tree's going to pull out and fall over the next time. Also, you might want to consider doing a little bit of end weight reduction on that tree, because obviously in the last blow, that tree was,
heavy on the end.
Doing some rocking and rolling, so it'd be good to probably take some weight out.
Let's bring Allison to the conversation and see how we can help her this morning.
Good morning.
Hello. How can we help you?
About 3-4 years ago, I bought an ash tree from a nursery. They came out and measured, where all the gas lines were. And it was like right where I wanted to plant the tree. So I said, we'll move it over a couple of feet. Well, now I'm second guessing whether or not I had them plant the tree too close to the underground gas line.
Well, the gas lines usually, if they're installed to code, are 3 feet below grade, and there's no, there are very few large trees. What size box did you put in? Size tree?
Well, the tree was. Is it a 24-inch box? 7 feet tall.
But was the box size about a 24-inch box tree?
Do you remember if it was wood crate or was it a plastic barrel?
It was in wood.
Okay. Yeah, probably a 24-inch. Even if it was a 36-inch box tree, they're only 28 inches deep from the soil level to the bottom of the box. So you're going to be above the depth of that line. I would not be too concerned about it. 80% of a tree's roots are in the top 18 inches of soil, 50% in the top 6 inches of soil, because roots only grow at a depth of soil where there's available oxygen for them to survive. They need between 8% and 14% ambient oxygen in the soil, and below about two or three feet, there's not enough soil to support root growth at all. So roots grow pretty much horizontally. They're going to grow out into the soil profile, like I said, pretty much in that top 2 feet of soil. So you shouldn't have any issues with that gas line, no matter how close you are. In fact, if you could have hand dug, you could have actually planted over the gas line. The only problem with that is if you ever needed repairs, you wouldn't be able to get down to it. So probably good to be where the tree is. But I wouldn't worry about that line, though.
Well, there you go, Alice. Rosie on the house, that's what we love to do. Just take away any anxiety you have. That's right. We have two calls in Tucson, Bill, and another one in, but we won't have time to take them in the segment. Y'all hang on, John. I'll take you at top of the hour news. We have about 2 minutes to wrap up. Final talking points?
Well, I wanted to mention a couple of things with regard to the soil remediation and the other services that we offer regarding soil, the air spade work. I am extremely proud of the 5 certified arborists we have on staff with Integrity Tree Service, doing disease and problem diagnosis, working with these new technologies with the air spade. I just want our listeners to know, if you have any needs for problem diagnosis in your yards, any consulting concerns, feel free to give us a call. We have our arborists are serving the various parts of the Phoenix Valley, and they'll get out and try to address those issues and give you a management plan going forward to tackle some of those trickier issues with your underground problems primarily.
And then that website for certified arborists around the state?
That's isa-arbor.com, and you can reach Integrity Tree Service at itreeservice.com, the letter itreeservice.com.
And on that website, I can also get that article on what you talked about here.
Preparing trees for summer. That's right.
John Eisenhower, Integrity Tree Service. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Keep Rosie on the House the number one referral directory in the state by voting at rosieonthehouse.com or ranking Arizona.